Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Markowitz. We're your hosts for the weekend edition, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. On this weekend show, we're kicking off with Dana Lyons. We're going to follow up Dana's commentary with a few more, let's say, macro comments on what the main drivers are. Again, a lot related to the Fed and this general tightening process, but also dealing a lot with what bear markets, how they play out. Dana, last time we had you on the show, about 2 weeks ago, you mentioned that you were starting to position for a bit of a dead cat bounce or bear market rally because of how much the markets had sold off. We have gotten a bit of a rally here for the markets. Again, nowhere near going back to their highs. But I wanted to ask you, what are you positioning in for these types of bounces, considering, look, it most likely just needs to be a short-term trade, but what do you think can move the best during these short periods?
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting, as you mentioned, during like the meat of a bear market, the correlations all, you know, everything go, the correlations go to one pretty much. Nothing, the relative strength, relative weakness kind of falls by the wayside. Everything gets dumped. Nothing, like the defensive sectors that had held up very well, staples, utilities, everything starts getting pretty much dumped when you have that those big waves of selling pressure, usually at the end of a short-term, you know, downswell, which I think we got in the middle of the month around the last time that we spoke. So it was a combination of things that had us at least turning short-term bullish. One was significant price levels, price support levels, especially based on Fibonacci, and many of the indices were getting reached or tested at that point, especially in some of the broad averages like the Value Line Geometric, the Russell 3000, even the S&P 500 in the low 3800 range we were looking for. So you had some price levels being tested that we thought would at least provide some short-term support. You also had some washout type readings and sentiment. We didn't get necessarily the short-term spikes in fear that we often see at that major bottoms, but we had some longer-term type sentiment readings that were consistently very negative that persisted for several weeks. So that was the washed-out sentiment was another reason. And thirdly, we had some internal, some breath readings that did certainly reach some washed out levels. I think the last time we spoke a couple weeks ago, I was mentioning that the NASDAQ, if we had a really bad day, the NASDAQ new lows might set a new record. Well, they didn't set a record, but we saw, I think it was on that May 12th day, we saw, I think it was the third most new lows on the NASDAQ in history, only behind the crash of 87 and then one day during the COVID crash. So you had a number of factors lining up for a decent bear market bounce, short-term, intermediate-term rally, whatever it's going to be. But we did cover almost all of our shorts and started buying some really some index-type positions at those lows looking for a bounce.
Well, Dana, I think you've called these markets very well, really, over the last couple of years. But last year, at the end of the year, you were looking at those breath readings and saying, hey, there's a lot of weakness under the surface. It wouldn't surprise you if you saw some of the hot sectors like the growth sector sell off. And that's exactly what we saw. And really, there was a big rotation from growth to value over the last 6 months, let's say. And a lot of those have just completely tanked. They're down 40, 60%. Some stocks even down 70, 80% individually. Same thing with those reopening stocks and some of the stay-at-home stocks. But when you're playing this bounce, you said you're looking at the indexes for now. Are there any other sectors that you like just as an individual sector? I know you were a little more constructive on some of the other value sectors like consumer staples and utilities, but those have actually gotten hit recently. So is there any sector that you think is safe to go long at this point?
For a trade, yes, almost any of the sectors, really. And the beaten down stuff during a bear market rally are going to obviously bounce the most. So something like tech and consumer discretionary will see the biggest bounces. But the stuff that we like to play in a technical bear market bounce are tickers and indices that are testing really clear levels of support, clusters of key support levels on our chart. So if we're getting a lot of clarity in the price levels on a certain chart and we're testing those, then we're confident going into pretty much anything if the price levels are clear, whether it bounces, whether it outperforms on the upside or underperforms a little bit, we don't care as long as we have clarity that we are at solid price support and are bouncing. Two examples that we bought a couple weeks ago and then last Friday again on a retest would be the IWV and IWB. That's the Russell 1000 and the Russell 3000. So a large cap index and a very broad market index, both tested really clear clusters of Fibonacci support that suggested, you know, at least a temporary reprieve in the selling or maybe even a decent intermediate term bounce. So those are a couple of charts that were clear enough that we felt rather than trying to pick some relative strength sectors when everything is selling off, we thought the charts are clear enough that we'll just pile into a lot of those few positions and play for that bounce. Because, like I said, when you're in the meat of the bear market, like you mentioned, the last few weeks, they took apart this consumer staples and the utilities, which had held up very well. Those broke down as well. So it's hard to rely on relative strength sometimes when you have those the major severe bouts of selling pressure within the bear market. I guess the only sector that has been more or less immune to that has been energy. So we have a decent allocation of energy and holding on to those positions right now as they actually hitting 52-week highs, several of those positions. So I guess that's the only sector that's really been, you know, like I said, immune to the selling pressure.
How are you playing the energy sector then, Dana? Because you're right, energy has still done pretty well. Oil is off some of its highs, but what vehicles do you use to trade energy right now?
You know, we use all ETFs, so we are long the USO, playing the oil itself, but more so in the energy equities. So a couple ticker symbols, obviously XLE, we are long XOP. We're looking at FXN is another energy ETF, and so there are a number of them. Most of them are trading similarly, but I think right now XOP's got a chance. If we can break out above current levels, that might give you a little bit more juice here in the short term.
What about the rest of the commodity sector? They were doing pretty good for a while. A lot of the individual ETFs, whether it was the grains or the metals, a lot of them have pulled back some now. Some of that was based on the Ukraine narrative, but just technically, are there any commodities that you're liking the setup here?
Yeah, to us, it's still everything pretty much in commodity land is just consolidating those big run-ups they had earlier in the year, you know, including oil, including the grains. Metals also, we've seen some more weakness than we wanted to see in the metals of late. But for the most part, across the commodity gamut, I think we're just seeing some consolidation of those rallies that we saw early in the year. And we haven't seen any material breakdowns or anything like that. So we're still long a lot of that space and waiting it out a little bit until the next wave up, which we think will come. We think these moves are more or less, you know, continuation patterns where they're just storing up some fuel for the next leg up. Until we see, you know, like I said, definitive breakdowns, we'll stay long, you know, the grains, energy complex, and even some of the metals.
So, Dana, are you worried at all that the commodities do get pulled down if there is that next sell-off within the markets?
We'll make the necessary adjustments if that does happen. They held up very well in the most recent selling pressure. So, to us, commodities in general are still in a bull market. Until prices and the evidence changes, we're going to treat it as such. So, there's been kind of a dichotomy between them and some of the commodity equities. I think we talked about last time. The commodity equities were holding up pretty well for the first couple months of this correction on the back of the strong commodities. But once you got into that, some of the more severe stock market selling pressure, they can't, the equities, even if they're commodity resource related equities, they can't hide the fact that they're still equities. So they end up bringing those down too. So I think those have suffered more so than the commodities of late, just because they obviously they are stocks, so they're going to get dragged down with the rest of them, especially if they're tied to, you know, indices, which in which, you know, everything's going to get sold off in those cases. So I think that's probably the root of their relative weakness versus the commodities themselves.
Yeah, good points, Dana, because we've seen a lot of the metals and even the energy components hold up very well, but not necessarily all the equities, which did get hit pretty hard, especially some of the metal stocks. What about the cryptoverse in the crypto land? I know you had mentioned in our last interview you were considering going long because you thought things had pulled back enough to a support level that looked attractive. What's your take on Bitcoin or Ethereum at these levels?
Yeah, we started, but I guess it was like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, we got rid of all of our crypto exposure because we thought there was a good chance that we visit around that 28,000-29,000 level in Bitcoin and in Ethereum around that 1,700 to 1,900 level. So we saw that last time we spoke. I think we're testing that a couple of weeks ago, that level. So we did start buying some exposure back into Bitcoin and Ethereum at that point, testing that area again here late in the week now. So we are long looking for a bottom of at least short-term bounce. And it might be something a more substantial, more durable, longer term bottom here. So right now we are long. We don't put a ton of exposure, ton of allocation in our client portfolios towards cryptos. But again, given the volatility, given the beta in those instruments, you don't need a big allocation to see some of the benefits if we do get that rally.
Yeah, fair enough, Dana. Those cryptos, boy, oh boy, can they move. I also want to talk about the tech sector because the NASDAQ has been one of the more volatile of the broad averages, and it has been under quite a bit of pressure. We've seen some fairly weak earnings come out of some of the major tech companies. Snap was this week, I believe, that had some weak earnings. Do you see tech as losing kind of the market lead? Tech seemed to lead markets much higher over the last decade. Is it losing that luster?
Well, definitely over the intermediate to longer term scheme of things, tech is definitely a laggard now. So I don't see it until the evidence shows us on the charts and the price action that that's going to resume its leadership. You have to assume that the leadership is dead for probably a long time. That's one mistake that investors make a lot is once a cycle ends, they hold on to that the former leadership too long, expecting them to resume the leadership, which once those longer term cycles end, it takes a long time for those sectors to come back and resume their leadership. So probably specifically because of that fact that there's probably way over owned, too many investors, too much of money tied up in there. It means too many potential sellers remaining in the market for those to get any traction. So I don't expect like tech and growth and discretionary to lead the market higher for anytime soon. If that changes and the evidence changes, then we're happy to change with it. But at this point, they're probably going to be relative laggards for the foreseeable future.
Well, Dana, that's a great point. We saw that in the dot-com bubble that a lot of the prior leaders never came back to leadership positions. Some of the companies completely went out of business. In fact, a lot of them did. And then it took a long time for some of the household names we have today to claw their way back higher. What about on the short side? When we see this bounce, this relief rally, what will you be looking for to shift from a long, you know, shorter-term trade in the markets and indexes to more of a hedging strategy where you put your shorts back on?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be looking for any sort of weakening in the internals, any divergence in the internals. We'll be looking for, obviously, you know, specific like definitive price resistance on the charts, and specifically looking at those laggards that we're talking about that are now leading to the downside or have led to the downside for most of the year. So looking at the growth names at tech, at the NASDAQ, at consumer discretionary, those types of names, they might not have as much downside beta as they did in that first initial wave. But those are the relative laggards right now. So I would continue to key on those after whatever rally we have here runs its course. Those would be the areas of the market I would be focused on for reshorting and playing probably more aggressively to the downside for the next wave down.
So, Dana, real quick, let's talk about the bond market, because rates broadly have peaked. The 10-year is down to about 2.7% and change. That's off of a little over 3% that it was. I realize interest rates are still very low, but they do seem to be on this uptrend. We have seen kind of the broad pullback in interest rates where money have flown into bonds. Where do you see bonds going from here?
Well, as you know, we've talked about it a lot. We think that the long cycle in interest rates, the 60-year cycle, approximately 60-year cycle, has bottomed in interest rates, which means prices have topped. And interest rates, if hundreds of years of the cycle is correct, then we're probably headed higher in interest rates for many years or decades to come. We did cover a lot of shorts in the bond market, but we'll be looking at levels on the downside to add that exposure, that short exposure back once we get to there. Like I said, we do think that yields are going up for a long time to come. It won't be a straight line, but a couple, if you're looking at the 10-year specifically, a couple levels we'll be have our eye on are about 250, and then back down around 210 would be some levels we'll probably be looking at adding some short exposure back on pretty aggressively.
All right, Dana, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thank you so much for going through a number of different sectors, how you are playing those, and still sounds like we are, let's say, in the middle of this bear market, but rallies come in the middle of these markets, and that's what we're seeing right now. Who knows how strong this rally is going to be, but I don't know. There's just so much negativity out there. It's such a different world for the financial markets. Dana, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Sounds great. Thanks, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation we had with Dana Lyons, really focusing on the markets, individual sectors that Dana likes and where he sees opportunity. Boy, oh boy, Dana has been pretty much spot on during this pullback in markets. We are now chatting with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manager of the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian, I want to stick to more of a macro conversation here when it comes to how different markets react in these environments. We'll start off with the whole narrative around recession, because recent economic data out of the U.S., and actually in all fairness out of a wide range of countries, does show a broad slowing, and depending on how you want to view the data, well, we could have a recession or a so-called recession right around the corner. This ties into a Fed tightening. We'll get into that scenario later. Let's say we do move into a recession, and it's not a short recession. It's at least a couple quarters, maybe even over a year long. When you're looking at individual markets, how do you break down where investors could invest, or quite frankly, should investors even be investing while a recession is underway?
Good day to both of you. Thank you for having me. Let's just start. I mean, I think that despite what the Fed is saying, the Fed doesn't think there's a very high chance probability of a recession. Jerome Powell still thinks they can have a soft landing. But despite that, it seems pretty clear, as you say, that the U.S. economy and other economies are slowing. And it's hurting in particular, as you would expect, it's hurting in particular the less well-off people, the lower middle class, the working class. And you look at Target and Walmart and several other stores, in fact, in the U.S. that have reported but cater to that demographic. Have reported warning signs, and in particular, what we're seeing is consumers may still be spending the same amount of money, but with inflation, with consumer prices up 8.5%, and many people think they're actually higher than that, of course, that means that the volume has declined. If people are spending the same amount of money, but prices are up, the volume has declined. And you're seeing two things. You're seeing people forego things that they had wanted to buy or indeed that they normally buy. Recent survey of consumers said that 60% of consumers said that in the last 2 weeks they had not bought something that they would normally buy. And the other thing that's happening, of course, is people are downgrading what they're buying. And about 50% of people in this survey said that this year they have consistently bought lower quality or perceived lower quality goods. In other words, you might buy the store brand cereal instead of the Kellogg cereal. So I think there's, in my view, there's very little doubt that we are heading into a recession, maybe by the end of this year. I mean, a recession, as you know, in the U.S., the definition is two quarters of back-to-back negative GDP growth. So, you know, whether we can call a recession this year or whether it starts this year, but we don't call it till next year, I don't know. But there's very little doubt in my mind that we're heading there. If inflation continues anywhere near where it is, so 5, 6, 7%, or the Fed continues to tighten, we're heading into a recession. I think we're going to see a recession before we see inflation under control. What is inflation under control? The Fed says 2%. I would say 0% was a better inflation rate. But we're going to see a recession before we see inflation under control, which means stagflation.
All right, Adrian. So you've outlined the fact that you do think we're going to see a recession in the U.S. in the near term. Back to the question, though, what sectors, what areas in the financial markets can do well, can withstand the downtrend? Let's get back to more the investment thesis behind this, please.
So in answer to your question, there are various studies that have been done by various organizations. I'm sure a lot of people have seen them, about how different assets perform in different economic scenarios. If you look at stagflation since 1971, so in the last 50 years, we've had 22 different tightening cycles. Most of them haven't lasted very long, of course. Some of them have only been a month or two. But we've had 22 different tightening cycles since 1971. And typically, in a tightening cycle, stocks go down at the beginning. Typically, interestingly enough, the dollar tends to fall and gold tends to go up once we get into the tightening cycle. They tend to have opposite directions ahead of the tightening cycle when the Fed is talking about it. In a stagflation, energy came out, looking at the history, energy came out as the top performing asset class, followed by gold. And they were the two standouts, over 20% in each case, followed by emerging market stocks, emerging market bonds, and other commodities. And developed stocks and bonds, including U.S. stocks and bonds, tended to be the worst performers. So that's been fairly consistent over that 50-year period. Now, one of the things you always have to do, of course, correlation is not causation. Anytime you look at something like this, you have to look at, well, were there other things going on that affected the results? Clearly, in the second half of the 1970s, which was the long inflation, the long stagflation, rather, the long stagflation that we had, and the most famous one, we did have an extraneous factor, which was the Arab oil embargo, which sent oil significantly higher. So I'm not saying we can discount oil, but I think we have to be aware that that return skews, you know, the whole study. But certainly gold has been the number one performer and or near the top, and consistent over all tightening periods, and that's important. And commodities have been generally, including oil, have also been strong. Now, emerging markets, I mentioned, or let's not call them emerging markets these days, let's call them smaller markets, because, you know, when we look at emerging markets in the 70s, we were including Singapore, Hong Kong. You know, I don't think of those as emerging markets. Let's call them less developed markets or smaller markets. They have tended to do well in this environment, particularly an inflationary environment. But the important thing for those markets is that the dollar declines. So if we don't see a dollar decline, those markets may not do so well. So I'm sorry, I've thrown a lot at you there, but I mean, the bottom line, if you like, is in a stagflation, which is my default scenario in the economy for the next year or two, gold will do well, commodities tend to do well, smaller foreign markets, particularly value stocks, tend to do well. The U.S. and other developed markets, including, of course, bonds, tend to do badly.
Yeah, Adrian, a lot to digest there, and a couple of good points. I mean, the first point I think you made was that there's the health of the consumer is what we have to look at here for growth moving forward, and if growth is going to slow down. They're getting hit from both ends. The consumer is getting hit from inflation and prices at the gas pump, prices at the grocery store, prices for services, but they're also getting hit by the wealth effect, because, you know, you had mentioned that if the markets were to get hurt further, people would feel that and maybe dial back their purchases. I would submit that after a lot of markets pulling back 20-30%, or some sectors down 40-80%, a lot of people are already feeling that wealth effect erode. And we just saw some of the worst starts to for housing starts yesterday, out down 16.6% month over month and over 20% year over year. So there are less homes being built. So you are starting to see that slowdown in growth narrative, and you brought up the recessionary pressures and which sectors will do good. It sounds like, to summarize, you're looking for people to look for value. So whether it's gold or the energy sector, some of the commodities, or just maybe some of the more defensive names, people are going from speculative, you know, the less consumer discretionary, more consumer staples. What do they actually need to survive? And they're dialing back a lot of their excessive purchases. Is that a good way to look at it?
I agree with you 100% there. And when I talked about Toll Brothers, a high-end house home builder, I was just saying they had a good quarter and reported that they had strong pricing power. They saw no decline from pricing. But first of all, they're a high-end builder. And secondly, that's a backwards-looking report. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying. You know, when you get to investing, I've never been, I don't have so much of an ego that I won't quote other people. And Matt McClellan, who's the chief investment strategist for the First Eagle Global Funds, which, you know, maybe in Canada they're not famous. They used to be called SoGen Global, run by Jean-Marie Aviard. They had one of the best performing returns over 40 years. Never number one, but rarely near the bottom. He made a really great comment. He said, you know, if you're in a boat in a storm at sea, your goal is to get home safely not to break the speed limit. So in this kind of environment, you shouldn't be looking for what stocks are going to give me the best returns. You should be looking for what assets are going to protect my assets as best as we can. And so again, that comes back to gold. Gold is a clear beneficiary of that. Now, you know, it might mean that we want to shift our weighting within the gold sector, you know, buy a little more of the physical, buy a little more of the royalty companies, buy a little more of the well-financed, you know, the big producers that do have good balance sheets. And I hate to say this on your show, but maybe buy a few more of the, buy a few less of the speculations, unless they have a clear trigger.
Fair enough, Adrian. This does not seem to be the environment to get into some of the riskier stocks, especially ones that bleed cash, simply because cash seems to be pretty hard to come by for some of these stocks. Adrian, let me ask you then quickly, how aggressive are you in these markets? Are you actively investing right now? Do you think a near-term bottom is in, or are you still sitting on a bit of a cash position waiting for a potential further downdraft that covers a wide range of markets and sectors?
Well, no, good question. And remember, I'm a full-time investor. It doesn't mean I'm any good at it, but I'm a full-time investor. I'm doing this full-time. And so what I'm doing may be a little different from what maybe the guy sitting at home or the guy with a full-time job might want to do. I do think the global markets, the developed global equity markets, have oversold in the short term. We're talking short term now. So I think this, like today, yesterday, and even on Friday, it's easy to be. I'm an excellent hindsight investor, by the way. I think this is a good time to be buying some major equities. Now, I would focus on the more defensive sectors. I'm not going to rush into Tesla, even though in the next month, Tesla, or ARK fund may prove to be to give you better returns than some of the other things, but I would focus on the more defensive companies, consumer staples, and so on. But I think the market has definitely oversold, and that's the U.S. market. It's also the British, European markets. Notice as an Englishman, I separate Britain from Europe. It's also Hong Kong and Singapore. So a lot of markets around the world are offering good opportunities right now. Now, these will likely, for me, they will likely be trades. And it might be 2 months, 3 months, you know, that kind of time frame is what I'm thinking. But certainly if we see markets rally back to where they were at the end of March, and certainly where they were in, you know, January, I will be looking to lighten up. So that's number one. If we're looking at commodities, yeah, and gold, I think a lot of the commodity stocks and gold stocks are well overdone. And that includes, you know, copper, for example. The copper stocks have had a outsized decline, I think, based largely on concern about China. You know, Freeport's gone from what, over $50 to $35 on last week. You know, that's a pretty significant decline in just quickly looking, you know, in a month. And a lot of other copper stocks have had similar declines. So I think this is a good time for traders to be buying. And that certainly also applies to gold. I mean, we've been filling up with gold, frankly. We've been filling up with gold and gold stocks. But I've been focusing more, you know, the larger cap names, as opposed to, let's say, a year or 2 years ago, when two of every three purchases might be a junior or an exploration or a prospect generator, two out of every three buys today or this week have been seniors. And you know, I think people who don't own some of the big royalty companies, they had a really good opportunity last week. They've got a good opportunity today. Franco at 140, Royal Gold at under 115, Wheaton, Osisko. I think these are all good buys right now, especially if you don't own them.
Adrian, I think that covers it here. You've walked us through a wide range of sectors, and I think the real takeaway is it's a very different market than we have experienced, it feels like, in the last decade. I realize we've had pullbacks in the last decade, but this long, drawn-out pullback with the Fed seemingly sticking to its tightening path really has to have investors focused on different aspects of the market, and also maybe not being too aggressive right now. Look, it's always enjoyable chatting with you. Thank you again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Well, thank you both. Thank you both very much.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Cortland Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm happy to report that I have back on the show with us Byron King, longtime newsletter writer with Agora, currently writing for St. Paul Research. You can also find Byron's recent work at investorintel.com. Chad, unfortunately, is on another call for this segment, so it's just going to be Byron and I chatting, and we're going to very much focus on resource stocks. Byron, I last saw you at that Vancouver Investment Conference in Vancouver about a week and a half ago. We sat down, chatted about some of the stocks, and I said, Byron, I got to get you back on the show because you are really up to date on a wide range of resource stocks, and I think you carry a very level-headed approach when it comes to analyzing these stocks. Broadly, I think we can say that most resource stocks, just like almost every other stock in the markets, seems to be under pressure. I do want to start with some of the larger companies then, because the larger resource companies, their health seems to be pretty strong. Metals prices broadly higher. Yes, costs are rising, but these companies are building up pretty large cash positions. And we even had a company like Barrick recently buy back $1 billion worth of stock. Unfortunately, their market cap dropped by about $1 billion after that fact due to the market downtrend. But as you view the top of the pyramid type of resource stocks, Byron, what's your assessment of the overall health of these companies?
Well, it is great to speak with you. Thank you so much. It's been too long since we've had one of these podcast talks. As far as the big guys go, you know, what you said was, you know, absolutely echoes what I think. We're in a really sweet spot in terms of their cash generation. But how do they generate that cash? They're the big guys, you know, the big mining, the Barricks, the BHPs, the Rio Tintos, whatever. They are generating all of this cash by digging up deposits that were discovered, you know, pick a number, 30, 40, even 50 years ago. And, you know, they just happen to be in the sweet spot of the market where, you know, the cash is rolling in. And so management seems to think, many management teams at the top of the pyramid, many management teams seem to think that their job is mostly to manage that cash and feed it back to the shareholders in dividends, feed it back to you know, the market in general in share buybacks. And, you know, and you want to be careful of going overboard with that. You mentioned Barrick, you know, you buy $1 billion worth of shares, and then the share price, you know, the market cap drops because it's a wash, okay? Be careful of doing that. There was a company that was making huge amounts of money for a decade, just raking it in, cash, 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 and they did nothing but big dividends and share buybacks. And that company was called Boeing. And, you know, a different sector, yeah, they make airplanes. They're aerospace. They're not mining. But you want to be careful that you don't take all this money that you got and just literally, you know, flush it out into the market. And you're not sticking to what you need to do, which is, in Boeing's case, you know, build a better airplane. But in mining's case, take that money and go back out and replace and find those deposits that you're digging up, the 50 and 40 and 30 year old deposits. You're living off the legacy of people who are long deceased, if not, you know, maybe they're retired or in a nursing home or something. That you need to get out there and explore on your own, or be buying up the companies that have done the hard work, you know. And we don't see nearly enough of that. We should, perhaps we will, but we're not seeing it yet.
So, Byron, when do these smaller companies finally get cheap enough for the big guys to take them over? Because you're right, we haven't seen the M&A. That directly impacts the juniors, because if the juniors aren't getting bought up, then all we're seeing is more and more resources being found. But that just means there's more and more resources in the market. So those resources, unfortunately, they're seeming to get lower valuations. What do you think spurs some M&A activity?
Well, you know, you would think that the situation of, you know, burning up your reserves and not replacing them would generate a process that, you know, like literally every year, every 2 years, you know, there would be this M&A cycle. We haven't seen it. The big companies are not doing their job. They are, in many respects, they're letting the air out of the junior sector in terms of exploration and early stage development. The explorers and early stage development teams are doing their job. You know, I know, we were there last week in Vancouver. We saw dozens and dozens and dozens of companies out there at Vancouver who have done terrific work in the last, you know, pick a number, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You know, they are just better companies in every respect. You know, more exploration, better geology, better geophysics, smarter geologists, better management teams. They've raised money during good times and bad times. You know, they kept the roof on the house during COVID when you couldn't travel across international borders. A lot of companies out there have done really, really great jobs. And the punchline is their share prices are down to ridiculously low levels. When you say, how low can they go? Well, I don't know. I guess you can always go lower. But at some point, you know, these companies are bargains out there just waiting to be, you know, waiting to be bought into, which is good for, you know, retail investors right now. If you care to wade into the market, you know, tumult out there, and be willing to ride it through the storm. You know, I mean, when you look at what's happening in the rest of the big market, you know, the so-called tech markdown, you know, the fangs, that, you know, the Facebook and the Netflix and all that who have dived down, or even crypto. Crypto was this, oh, crypto. Yeah, great. Crypto's lost $1.5 trillion with a T dollars worth of value in the last, you know, what is like 2.5-3 months. You know, and at the same time, you've got companies out there that have copper in the ground and gold in the ground and nickel in the ground. And that copper, gold, nickel, it's not going anywhere. And the thing is that you can't, you know, when they talk about we're going to mine a Bitcoin or we're going to mine another crypto, we're just going to take the computers and we're going to crunch them and we're going to mine another. Yeah, right. Some of this stuff that the real miners mine has been in the ground for a billion years and 2 billion years, 2.5 billion years. You're not making any more of that stuff. If you've got control of that kind of resource, you know, up in the Precambrian of Canada, or, you know, in the Andes Mountains of South America, or in, you know, Sonora, Mexico, or so, if you got control of that, nobody can sort of regenerate that just by, you know, using a bigger, better computer algorithm and, you know, more computers, more electricity or something.
Yeah, that is fair. The problem is costs are going up too. So it is more expensive to pull this stuff out of the ground. And as I said, look, there are more resources out there. 1 million ounce gold resource is nowhere as attractive as it used to be 5, 10, 15 years ago, because it seems like a lot of these companies that have been around for that period of time do have at least 1 million ounces, sometimes up to 4-5 million ounces, and it seems like they're waiting to get taken out. Some of these companies moving through more economic studies. Fact of the matter is, the potential acquiring companies, they would do their own internal studies. It really turns out to be one of this waiting game type of aspects. Byron, how are you valuing resources in the ground then? Because as I said, per ounce, per pound of copper, it seems like they are getting less and less value as we progress through this even bull market that we can call it.
Well, there's lots of different ways to do it. I mean, one of the things that you look at is, you know, who is the management team? You know, what's their track record? What have they done before? And then also, you know, what's the jurisdiction? It's one thing to have 1 million ounces of gold, you know, in the Northwest Territories. You know, it's another thing to have 1 million ounces of gold, you know, in certain parts of Quebec. You know, and like you say, 1 million ounces, it ain't what it used to be. I'll mention a company, Banyan Gold, B-A-N-Y-A-N Gold in the Yukon. They revised their resource estimate from 1 million to around 4 million ounces. Recently, and you know, now that is worth looking at. They have terrific geology. Every time they drill holes, they seem to find something else. You know, knock on wood, right on a highway, right next to power lines, right down the street from another mining development that just, you know, came online 2, 3, 4 years ago. You know, and so a very developable project. You know, I mean, and it's one of the reasons why Banyan Gold has not really suffered, I would say, the downdraft that many other companies in the gold space have. You know, another company I like in the U.S. is Group 10 Metals out in Montana, in the Stillwater District, literally, absolutely right adjacent to the Sibanye-Stillwater play. I mean, you can go out there and you can stand with 1 foot on Sibanye-Stillwater and another foot on the Group 10, you know, mineral claims, again, you know, copper, nickel, cobalt, platinum group metals, gold, even chrome. Nobody mines chrome anymore, but you know, I mean, they've got it out there. So, you know, again, you know, really nice plays right in the middle of, you know, good jurisdictions, you know, with roads and power and, you know, workforce, all that sort of thing. So, you know, when you talk about there's lots of 1 million ounces out there, there's lots of 2 million ounces. Yeah, but, you know, you want to look at who's the management team and you want to look at where are they, you know, who are the neighbors. And so those are just some of the things that I think go through my head as I, you know, evaluate these guys to give them, you know, to give them the thumbs up sign.
Byron, I appreciate that. Didn't even need to ask you for some of your favorite companies, so thanks for getting right into those. Dealing with management teams then, look, some of the most successful management teams over history here have actually slowly started to retire. There has been a general new blood in the sector with some younger management teams that seem to have some fairly attractive properties and assets. How do you go about evaluating these teams if, quite frankly, they've come into the sector in the last 10 years when there hasn't been much M&A? And that's a key distinction I find within management teams.
Yeah, well, again, you know, it's important to go to the conferences. It's important to meet the teams. It's in my experience, and at least pre-COVID, you know this. I mean, I used to travel a lot, you know, I mean, for the last 2 years for myself and pretty much everybody. I mean, travel was restricted, but travel is opening up again. My view of it is, you know, the older management teams, they might be retiring, you know, but I'm still around. And, you know, I used to travel a lot. I used to kick the rocks a lot, you know, go out to the core shack, talk with the geologists, talk with the management teams. That's all going to be happening again in terms of at least what I do, you know. So I think that, I mean, the resources are there. They need to be developed. We are in a world that is so resource short and that is so underinvested in, undercapitalized in. And you can say that about mines and minerals, and you can say that about so much, you know. I mean, in a tangential sort of way, you know, the people who are listening to this podcast, you're probably aware that there's a baby formula crisis in America. You know, it's in the, you know, people are talking about it. They're flying in baby formula from Europe and all, because that whole situation managed to get underinvested over a period of years, and there's not enough. Well, guess what? You know, there's an electricity shortage in America too. We're going to have it this summer. We're going to have blackouts in the Midwest and the Far West. You know, we have underinvested in baseload power. We've underinvested in a grid system. You know, we've underinvested in so much. You know, this whole world, certainly the U.S. much of Canada has been underinvested for so long, and it's all about to hit the fan, you know. And it's either going to hit the fan in a bad way. Well, it will hit the fan in a bad way for many people, many places, many things. But, you know, in investment terms, you know, if you want to put yourself out there, you know, with your catcher's mitt, you're going to be able to, you know, find some really great things in the sweet spots of that catch up, of that mad scramble to, you know, to make up for lost time. And when people say, oh, we're going to have a copper crisis. No, we're not going to have a copper crisis. We have a copper crisis. Oh, you know, there's lots of million ounce gold deposits out there. Yeah, but in the world that's evolving, people are going to be buying million ounces of gold, you know, hand over fist, you know, because look what's going on with inflation, with the dollar. The dollar is ruining itself with, you know, 8%, 10% inflation. And, you know, we were speaking, you know, before about this. I mean, inflation really depends on, you know, where you are and how you live. I mean, if you drive a lot, inflation is a heck of a lot more than 8%, you know. I mean, if you're the price of your gasoline or your diesel fuel has gone up, you know, by 80 or 100%, you know. So if you're in the right spot, and if you get out there in front of where this thing is going, the opportunities are there. You know, are we going to fix the culture? Well, I hope so. I hope that we flush a lot of the culture of the last 50 years down the tubes, because, you know, a heck of a lot of good it was. I mean, look where it got us. But, that, you know, that's a big arm waving kind of argument. From the standpoint of the investors, you want to be where the need is, you know. And like I said, there's not going to be a minerals crisis. There is a minerals crisis. We don't have enough nickel, not enough copper, not enough cobalt. You know, there was a talk out in Vancouver by a fellow that silver is the new lithium in terms of, you know, where even something like solar power is going. For the amount of solar power that's going to be built, you know, there's just not enough silver. So there's lots of arguments to be made for why minerals in the ground, ore deposits, refining, processing capabilities are going to be the sweet spot of the next, you know, of the next decade, let's say.
So, Byron, before I get you out of here, then, sounds like you are encouraged for a wide range of resources. Any that are your favorite that you care to share with us, do you think have the best upside from here?
Well, if you had asked me that, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, I would have said energy, energy, and energy. But since then, energy, energy, energy has gone up, you know, remarkably high. I mean, I do think if you say, you know, what else is going to go up? Well, I think energy, energy, energy is going to keep going up. In terms of what is the most hated part of energy right now, I would say it's offshore oil and gas. So if you have any interest at all in offshore oil and gas, that's a place to look for, you know, for when the wheel turns on that. In terms of just sort of the general build out that has to happen, I mean, engineering firms that actually design and build, you know, the power grid that we're going to need, those guys are going to do well. In terms of the mines and the mining and such, you know, the big guys, I mean, I mentioned BHP, Rio. I mean, they're paying a nice dividend right now. It's not a bad place to park money and collect a dividend, even though I sort of, you know, I question the, you know, the long term, you know, where they're putting that much money, you know, out into the street as opposed to back into the ground. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Things will turn. You know, I think that energy and resources are a great place to be. And I would avoid all of the hypey stuff of the last years. All the COVID, the COVID companies, you know, the Pelotons and the Netflix, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, they were a flash in the pan. It's time to get real. It's time for the world to get real. If you're an investor who has not yet gotten real, if you're one of those, oh, I'm a young guy and I play my game stocks and all that stuff. Yeah, that's nice. You had your fun. But like I said earlier, crypto just lost $1.5 trillion worth of value. I guarantee you the copper industry, the gold industry, the nickel industry, the oil industry, they have not lost $1.5 trillion worth of value, because that's where you want to be.
All right, Byron, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you very much and welcome back to the show. I'm going to have you back on much more regularly. I always appreciate the way that you especially dissect through companies. We'll dive a bit more into some companies next time I have you on. Everybody, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. I hope you all enjoyed our commentary, and I know it can be a challenging market these days as everything seems to be broadly moving down, or if it's not moving down, it's going no bid. But the environment eventually will change. It seems like we're all just still waiting for the Fed to switch course. Who knows when that is going to be? Byron, everybody, again, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.